It's a show about fantasy football.
Welcome back to a show about fantasy football, where we talk about fantasy football on a show.
Whoa.
It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque cadence to my voice. Did you catch up? Like, was it good? Was it decent?
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't trying to sound like him. It was the cadence.
Yeah, I know, but still.
John, like, could you tell?
It was mid.
Oh, I'm not.
What's okay, the deal Ryan? With airplane food?
That's pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. All right, you did kind of sound like Bozo the Clown, but good to have you guys all with us today. We're gonna talk about a couple of things today. Number one, we're gonna talk about warp. Have you ever heard of warp? If you haven't, you play fantasy football, you should know about it. We're gonna talk about how you can use it, kind of analyze drafts, analyze fantasy football this year and beyond, looking at past years as well. And then we're also gonna talk in Dynasty about when you should give up on a player, or when shouldn't you give up on a player. It's an important discussion to have, and there's also an important distinction to be made in terms of, like, at what point are they a bust. We talk a lot about this in Dynasty, but we're going to really hash that out on today's episode, and also the trivia in the middle. Nathan leads 2-1. I am looking to tie it up. I guess we'll always refer to last week's episode as the episode that never aired because we didn't put it
for out. Multiple reasons.
It was pretty bad, but yeah. We just thought, you know what? I just don't think that's worth putting out. So anyways, I am officially on the board. I did get a point, yep. And I beat Nathan in Colts, yep, trivia, which,
yeah,
means I'm a bigger Colts fan. So anyways,
my gosh.
Who's doing news, you guys? Is it Ryan or Johnny Boy?
I'll get us. So there is absolutely nothing going on in the NFL right now.
You're
except,
kidding.
Except Jamarcus Russell making a reappearance after his great career.
Something philanthropic, right?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh, yeah. Well, not only did he make $36.4 million, but he just tried to make another $70,000+ by stealing from a charity. Actually, stealing donations. So that's the football news this time.
Modern day Robin Hood. I think that's how
Nathan
that story
and I were
goes,
talking
right?
The other day about... Yeah, pretty much. It's exactly the same. And if they were
steal from the rich, give to yourself.
I mean, hey,
steal from a charity, give to yourself.
If Disney remakes Robin Hood, they can just have Jamarcus Russell star in it, and there you go. I mean, he's your classic Robin Hood character, right there.
Right, that's exactly how I remember it going.
Yeah, but so
Russell Crowe is a better Robin.
And
Hood.
He would look really good in, like, whatever Robin Hood wears. I don't know.
Tights.
Yes, there you go. Thank you. Yeah. Nathan's big on football players and tights, but.
Regardless. Oh my gosh. Is Jamarcus Russell or Trey Lance? Which one is the bigger bust?
I think it would have to be Jamarcus Russell.
I think so too. Because we honestly, like, Trey Lance, I think at this point everyone would admit that even if Brock Purdy hadn't come along, he probably wouldn't have worked out.
Yeah.
Because he was so bad even in camp. Like, they didn't have to see any games for Shanahan to know that he sucked. And people were in denial. And I was like, dude, there's a reason that Purdy's the starting guy. But
at least Jamarcus Russell, you know, got an opportunity. Like, there's that part of it.
He failed so miserably with the opportunity.
Trey Lance was a bust that never even, like, touched the field. Like, that's an unprecedented bust, in my opinion. Like,
but also, like, think about the amount of weight gain Russell had. Like, there were headlines, like, Eddie Lacy, he made him look like a twig.
Yep. He had two extra S's in his name by the time he saw
it. What did he top out at? Was it, like, 350 when he was still on the active roster?
Oh, my. I have no clue, but he was a big boy.
Google Jamarcus Russell top
260. Google says 260.
Like that. That's what I use Alexa for. 260?
That's what Google says.
Oh, you thought it was over 300?
There's no way a quarterback got over 300. That's come on.
I was going to say, that's like...
There was a guy in the Arena Football League.
You talking about Jared Lorenzen, the hefty lefty?
He would sling it, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Yep, that was the guy.
Yeah. Okay, so... John, yeah, we have decided we're not talking about dead people on the podcast. So, John, you're going to have our first topic today, and I'll let you introduce it.
Okay, we really can't take Ryan anywhere, I tell you what. Okay,
no, it's all his fault.
So, topic one, we're going to be talking about warp, which, if you don't know what that is, it's wins over replacement player. And
yeah, I actually had no idea what that was.
Okay, well, welcome.
I'm learning.
Welcome to warp.
You didn't know what warp was?
We've talked about this before.
We have
really...
a fantasy football channel.
Do you know what warp was?
Yes. I don't subscribe to it, but I knew what it was. Like you got some of the guys in Dynasty are big.
Sounds like a warped
guys.
Statistic.
But here's...
Oh, my God.
Are big on what? On warp.
Seriously?
Yeah, just continue.
So a lot of people swear by it. people in our industry swear by it as the tool to like evaluate how you should be building your rosters. Even in Dynasty, there are a lot of Dynasty guys that you and I both are very well aware of that are, they swear by this. And I think it's a good tool, and I'll let you kind of keep introducing it, but
absolutely.
I'm just surprised he's never heard of it. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Warp, it's pretty simple. It's just your player, how many more wins that player's getting than the replacement player. So if there's 12 starting quarterbacks, quarterback 13 versus your quarterback. So if quarterback 13 is getting 13 points per week and your quarterback's getting 16, then whatever, basically it's going to differentiate the wins you would get throughout a season based on those 3 points per game. So it's a pretty helpful tool, and honestly, a lot of people really do swear by it. It helps you, really, it's not a predictive tool of like, yes, you need to get Debo and avoid George Pickens. This is a tool that you can use that's going to help you find a player range each year to target and a player range to avoid. And so when we talk about, okay, we've got tier-based rankings, this is the tool that can help you find those secret tiers to figure out your roster.
That makes sense.
Okay.
All right, let's get into it.
So let's talk about we'll just talk about some of the ranges that are the closest together where it really doesn't make a difference. Jalen Waddle, obviously, Dynasty darling, fantasy asset, super solid. And Cortland Sutton last year, wide receiver 21 versus wide receiver 35 in points per game, or average points per game. The difference is 0.18 wins. So over the whole season, the difference in wins between those two is not even, it's not a whole game, it's not a half a game, it's 0.18. And so we're going to try and find these ranges to take advantage of players between these ranges to really find the guy to target and go disgusting too.
Yeah. I mean, this is essentially gross. This is essentially what we advocate for when we're talking about like down tiering to
right.
to production adjacent players plus a pick in Dynasty. But in redraft, like even looking at look at their difference in points. Mm-hmm. I mean, they 14 versus 11.9.
Yep. Well,
like,
that's
not insignificant, mm-mm. but it's largely
it's price investment.
It's price and position based as well.
Yeah. And that's something that someone asked me in the comments directly, like in one of our YouTube videos this week in fantasy. They were like, Nathan, did you literally just say that you think Calvin Ridley is going to outscore Chris Olave? And I said, no, I'd rather take Calvin Ridley at price than I would Chris Olave in the second round, because you're getting Calvin Ridley as a mid to low end wide receiver 3 right now at price, when I know he is going to get around the same amount of targets that Chris Olave is going to get. Doesn't mean he's going to get more, just means he's going to get pretty close. And he had almost the same amount of yardage. I think they were very similar in yardage and very similar in production in 2023. And the situation ain't changing for Chris Olave. It's changing for Calvin Ridley, and there's more questions there, but you have a pretty high passing upside quarterback in Will Levis, who, if he works out, is going to benefit both Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins. So even if Calvin Ridley is outproduced by Chris Olave, if it's by a couple points per game at their price difference right now, you'd be winning more. You get a better premium and a better payoff out of investing in Calvin Ridley at price than you would Olave. So
yeah. So, I mean, people use that again, like as a way to basically justify what the different ranges are in fantasy football. And so you can keep going with some more examples, John. I think you've kind of got some really nice examples of this here, especially for this year.
Oh, absolutely. So wide receiver 9 in points per game, like the average last year, Michael Pittman versus wide receiver 20 is 0.24 wins. Again, these are small numbers. Over a year, the highest like warp difference makers are going to be over 3 points or around 2 points something points per game in that range. So 0.24 wins over a whole season, that's the difference between losing and winning one game, which if it's that close in the playoffs, okay, that sucks. But also we're going to use this small difference to find the advantage. So we'll also talk about RB 15 to 24 last year. The difference is 0.12 points. That's nothing.
That's quite literally nothing.
Wow.
It's
absolutely nothing. Wide receiver 9 to 14, talk about Michael Pittman too. The difference between 9 and 14 is 0.8. Or 0.08, not 0.8. 0.8 would actually
I was be. I going to say 0.8. Yeah, 0.8
would be. That would be a pretty big difference.
I'm kind of worried about that one. But I mean, the running back one, I think that's the running back dead zone, right?
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
literally what defines the running back dead zone.
So let's see the running backs that are going in that range. I'm pulling it up here. Very curious. Just I know running back 15 right now in ADP is Rashad White. He's the first guy there. And we're big advocates for taking Rashad White at the moment. Then you have Walker, Montgomery, Kamara, Jones, Ramondre, Najee, Brooks, Zamir White, and Jalen Warren.
And that's the thing. Like, the bust rate in that range is insane. Not only that, when you get guys in that range that actually finish that way in the season, the difference is nothing. So you're not only taking higher risk by taking someone at the front of that range, you're also, like, getting no more points.
So this is when you say running back 15 to 24, you're talking about how they finished?
How they finished, not their prices going into the year. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I was just reflecting the current prices going into 2024.
No, but that's interesting. Like, I would be curious to see the same examples with, like, their beginning of the year price. Like, because obviously, like, the wide receiver, not only like 9 through 14, but you have here as well, wide receiver 21 to 35. That is 14 wide receivers there.
Yeah.
A flat range.
Flat.
Which, again, this is between 9 and 14 and then 21 and 35. You see there's a little bit. This is exactly what I noticed when I looked at the production metrics last year and I graphed them out. From 14 to 21, there actually is a fairly steep drop-off there. Like, there actually was a difference between those ranges. Mm-hmm. But this is the wide receiver two plateau that we talk about.
Yep.
And it's rampant. It's rampant this year. It's worse this year because we've turned away from running back so much now that we're taking guys like Jaden Reed. Guys in the fifth round, like even George Pickens in the fourth.
Yeah.
Other guys include, help me out. Who are guys in that range this year that, like, shouldn't be fifth round players? Wide receivers in ADP this year.
Well, let me pull up here. You mentioned one of them in George Pickens. Who else is going in that range? We've got Christian Kirk, Terry McLaurin, Hollywood Brown, Keenan Allen.
I mean, yeah. Amari DeAndre Cooper, Hopkins is going in the top six rounds.
Yeah.
Christian Watson. Keon Coleman this year.
I mean, even Ladd.
Yeah. Cortland Sutton and Curtis Samuel are top 100 picks. And again, this is like, but really, when you're talking about, like, wide receiver, the wide receiver twos this year, who are the guys in the wide receiver twos? You know this because the end of the second round of fantasy drafts is bananas.
A ton of wide receiver twos, yeah.
But it's Olave, Ayuk, Collins, Adams, Waddle, Debo, Evans, Devonta, Neighbors, Metcalf, DJ Moore, Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs, Michael Pittman, Tank Dell, Zay Flowers. That gets you to wide receiver 26 from wide receiver 10, essentially. Yeah. That's this range.
And wide receiver 26, you have just reached the end of the third round once you've gotten wide receiver 26.
So I think one of the biggest application points that you can take away from this so far is when you are in this range, let's say you are drafting, at the five spot. So you have pick five, you have pick 17, and then it comes back to you at around pick 23, right?
Yeah.
At pick 17, you might as well take a running back there because you're still at the beginning of that range where it's wide receivers 10 through 25. You're still in that wide receiver 10 through 15 range at pick 17, whereas you can take a running back and get a player that's later in that range, a wide receiver that's later in that range, in round three at pick 23, 24. They'll be lower in that range, and you know historically the wins above replacement there are going to be marginal.
Exactly.
Between those receivers. I think that's a super applicable point, and really we have harped on the wide receiver implications of this, and we've never really quantified it. This is a quantifiable measurement of there is no difference between wide receiver twos, and there is a huge range of those guys this year.
And I'll even say this. I would say, in addition to what you guys have been saying, we can take it a step further of, like, the range actually gets nasty. Like, a lot of the names further down this list, like, I mean, we talked about Ridley, Myers, Kupp, Godwin, like, guys who didn't really do all that much in the Godwin's in 34 position. Like, it just is gross. And you get down to wide receiver threes, and even those, like, you can tier down and be just fine. I will say this for the listeners. Right now, you could also go to Dynasty Daddy, and you can find wins over replacement. And there's also a trade value chart for those of you who want to look at that in Dynasty. So you can find this player's going to go in this range, and you can look at the value chart and see who's way overpriced.
So do you want to hear...
I want to look at that.
Do you want to hear who went in the 15 to 24 range last year at running back?
Yeah.
Like, production-wise?
Yeah.
So I'm going to Pacheco was technically 15. I'm going to go the one guy above him because Pacheco was out for multiple games. So on a points per game basis, he was higher. Tony Pollard, Jerome Ford, David Montgomery, James Conner, Kenneth Walker, DeAndre Swift, B-Rob, Jalen Warren, Najee Harris, and Devon Achane.
Holy cow.
If you want to take Achane out of there because he missed a significant amount of time, you can go Gus Edwards.
Wow.
Jeez, dude. That's quite telling.
Yeah.
And how do we apply that to this year? With running backs especially, I think it's different because I think this is a strong running back year where people are fading running backs. And so I think there are going to be some significant drop-offs at times in the top 25 running backs.
Yep.
I think they might be in different places than they've been recently, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think as soon as the wide receiver twos start going and everyone is still like hot for the wide receivers, that's when I think we need to be hitting running back the hardest. Maybe that, I mean, you also could be getting into the beginning of the dead zone there. That's my only thing is like hitting running back early and then hitting running back late so you're not paying that premium price for a mid guy.
Right.
Yeah. Wide receiver 9 to 14 last year in production was Diggs, Adams, Chase, Collins, Pittman, and Ayuk.
Jeez. I mean, look. Okay.
So the price difference between Diggs and essentially Pittman, like that's multiple rounds.
I pulled up this warp tool. I do think like you have to be careful, like when you're using this to analyze going forward. For example,
yeah, you can't.
Anthony Richardson is way low on this list, and right next to him is Kyle Pitts. Two guys that, you know, Anthony Richardson's not going to have a super high warp last year, and they do have a warp per game metric.
Yep.
And it's even smaller for Anthony Richardson, but it's 0.07. And when you're looking at the guys around him in that range, it's half of that or less. So like the warp per game, in my opinion, is a little bit more valuable for guys who got injured or have different situations. But like Kyle Pitts, his warp per game is 0.01 from last year.
Yep.
Now, Kyle Pitts was in one of the worst situations in the league last year. So like, I don't think you can use that to say I'm moving off of Kyle Pitts because of this.
Yeah.
I'm not drafting Kyle Pitts in fantasy because he has a super low warp.
Yeah. If you use warp as, okay, this player sucked last year, now I'm going to just carry over the warp to the next year, it will not translate. You will lose your league, hands down. What you need to use this for is to say, this is the range. These are the players I think or predict could be in that range, and I'm going to bet on those ranges. I'm going to bet at the bottom of those ranges or bet on guys that are...
Bet on the cheapest values,
exactly,
essentially. Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to get wide receiver 13. Instead, I'll go down to wide receiver 20. You know, is Adam Thielen last year.
Right.
Right. And it's interesting they have the graphs on here as well, kind of looking at, you know, visualizing where the drop-offs are for warp. It's a pretty steep line at first, and it flattens out quite a bit as you get down lower. So this is interesting. Ryan, I'm curious because you're an analytical guy. You obviously created the bakery. You created the model. You're very into analytics and using that to kind of as a predictive measure, in fact. What are your thoughts on warp, and have you used it before? Do you subscribe to the warp?
It's kind of a tough, I haven't used it personally in any sort of drafting situations, which is kind of counterintuitive to how I operate with just about everything. Cause like, as you said, it is, you know, mostly analytical. But I just was not super exposed to warp much at all. And I haven't done a lot of drafts so far this year. So I haven't been paying attention to, you know, new information like warp is. But I mean, in terms of the logic side of it, it all works. I mean, on episode 2 of our little show here, I did mention that, like, fully independently of warp, I did mention that it seems like that running back dead zone is now, you know, everybody wanted to fade the running back early, and now that tide is shifting back to where it's like way more advantageous to take those running backs earlier, and this bears it out. I mean, isn't it great when statistics, you know, backup logic. It's not something that I've used all too often. I'll have to like really dive into it, you know, at some point here before the start of the season so that I can kind of tinker with it and see what it does. But I mean, it, while not being predictive of future success, it does, I mean, you can take a lot away from it as you guys were just doing, you know, sitting here. But
well, yeah, it's also going to be interesting to see in 2025 just how much the running back market flips and changes and probably increases in fantasy and dynasty alike, just with the class alone, the rookie class. Like, you're going to have a ton of those guys that are going way higher than you would initially expect, I would assume, just given landing spots and the demand at the running back position league-wide in the NFL right now, because you've got so many guys that are just, they're just aging out and getting older, and they're journeymen at this point, and they're kind of just Band-Aids for a year or two until another good class comes in. Yeah. And this has been one of the better classes in 25 that we've seen for really a generation of running backs, which is, you know, 3 to 6 years when you're talking NFL, or really 6 years when you're talking NFL terms. So that'll be interesting, but also because you'll see, like, you could use that argument as a way to say, I'm not investing in running back now because a bunch of the guys that have value now are going to be usurped by the more valuable rookies coming in next year's class. Mm-hmm. Or you could use it as an argument to say the entire position as a whole is going to become more valuable and we're going to see another swing. So that'll be really interesting to see. But I think for fantasy purposes this year, I completely agree with you guys. Like, I am eyeing those running backs big time, and I'm taking the low end values especially.
Yeah. Last point I want to talk about with this is mid-season trades. After about week 7 or 8, you can actually start to see warp that's going to carry out for the whole season. Before that, it's kind of hard to tell, like, okay, this player is going to finish in this range because week 1 they might go crazy. You know, it might be a Gabe Davis type of situation who just goes crazy. It's like, this guy's the guy to get. Well, you should wait till about week 7 or 8 to figure that out. And then once you've made it to that point, you got to use warp to your advantage to be like, okay, my league mate's going to see Michael Pittman, wide receiver 9, and I could get wide receiver 5, you know, A.J. Brown and Michael Pittman, and I'll just do some kind of trade to tier up to that. So really what warp can do is you can say, look, I've got quarterback 8. The difference between quarterback 8 and 15 is 0.1.
Well, that's a big thing too in fantasy also when you're playing 1QB formats. That's why we, Avery and I, always focus and harp on, like, hey, you have got to get, if you're not getting a top 4 or 5 guy that has that upside and has that ceiling rushing upside quarterback, then screw it. Just take a high-end quarterback 2 or a mid quarterback 2 because they have just as good a chance at ending as one of those bottom 4 in the top 12 range as the guys that are being drafted in that range. Like, it really is a difference of not that much at price.
Yeah,
so
right. Good, interesting conversation. I also think it can quantify some of the, you know, conceptual points that we make on our content.
Right. It really is just, it's kind of a fancy number and a fancy graph to visualize what we talk about all the time and our philosophy on fantasy.
But I also think people go too far with this, in my opinion. I think there are creators that take this too far and analysts that take this too far.
It's not gospel.
So it's not gospel. It is not a perfect way of analyzing fantasy football or even value ranges. So, but interesting discussion. I like that. I like that we covered this, especially because I think it's a term a lot of people hear that they don't necessarily know, you know, what the frick it means. So, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it is game show time. What's the score right now? We got a
2-1 Nathan.
2-1 Nathan lead. All right. So we are going to start first with, and remember, it's first come, first serve. So you answer first, you get the points.
That's how that works.
I know. Pretty crazy.
Okay.
Okay. Who is the youngest coach to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, Sean McVay.
Got it.
That was an easy one.
Okay. Since you guys got it at about the same time, Ryan, you might be able to tell.
Do you want to replay it?
We might need to get the replay.
Oh, he definitely got it before I did.
Okay.
He just...
Nathan...
I didn't know. I thought you were going to say go. One. I was waiting for you to say go.
Oh, no.
But, oh well.
Okay.
So there's
one more coach who is the same age as Sean McVay who also got it. Any ideas?
Is it?
I want to go.
It's Bill Cowher.
I think I've got a guess.
Let's hear Nathan's, and I want to hear yours.
I'm wrong, aren't I?
Yeah, you're wrong.
I can't. Bill Cowher's old.
It had to have been. Crap.
All right, you got 10 seconds.
Tomlin.
That's it.
That is it. Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
I had the wrong Steelers coach. So
that's a good guess.
Call first one off a tie.
I almost went old.
I was thinking like, old.
You were thinking who?
Don Shula.
Shula would have been a good guess.
Yeah.
I I don't know why I was leaning Walsh, but I didn't think it was right, so I ended up going Tomlin.
We got a 1-1 tie. Next up, I'll say go. Who has the most career tackles? 3, 2, 1, go.
Brian Urlacher.
Nathan?
Interesting.
I don't know, so I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I mean, he's a linebacker, so he was racking them up.
I have two more guesses, but I think if we don't get it right, both don't get it right the first time, we should get another guess.
Okay, that's fine. We'll do that.
The sucky part about saying it fast is that now he has all the time in the world.
Yeah, right.
So there should be a time.
We got it. All right, 10.
I'll go Lawrence Taylor.
Both wrong.
All right, let's do it again. Let me think about it for a second.
Oh, gosh. I feel like I should know this.
I know it. I'm kind of...
So it's a linebacker.
It is a linebacker.
I would have figured it was.
Yeah. Do you want another hint? Do you want a timeline?
Yeah, let's do it. Sure.
Okay. It is a linebacker who came into the league after 1995. He didn't come in 1995.
It's between two.
Is it Ray Lewis?
It's Ray Lewis.
I thought we were going to say go.
Let's
again.
Go.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
you got me on go the first time. I got you on go this time.
That's true. But I didn't get the point for the first one.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we're tied.
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. Are we going on go or not?
We both lost a point for it. We're going on go. We're going on go. Okay, there's a tiebreaker for this one if you guys can't get it. Okay. This is the last question. We have got, who is the youngest quarterback to start and win
easy.
Super Bowl? 3, 2, 1, go.
Brady.
What was yours?
Tom Brady.
And what was yours?
I said Brady. That was it.
Yeah, you're a smart boy. You shortened it.
Both wrong.
Oh, goodness.
Can I give a guess first?
I know it. It was my second guess. Yes, I know what this one is.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yep.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Mahomes.
Ben Roethlisberger.
It's Big Ben.
Oh, we tied, baby. Let's go.
Wow.
I forgot. I actually knew that one, and I just thought Brady because I'm like, he got put in as a backup, and then I was like, wait. It's two Steelers questions.
So it was Brady.
And you went AFC North with this. You were biased.
I did. I absolutely did.
Brady, Big Ben, and Mahomes, I think, are top three then, right?
I think that.
Because Mahomes was pretty close.
Yep. I think you're right. I wonder
Brady might be third,
there
actually.
There might be some older ones in there as well. Just because, like, it's...
Yeah. Potentially.
I mean, actually, I guess it would have had to have been rookie year.
Actually, was Montana up there?
John, Google it real quick. I want to Google the NFL tackles.
Montana may be up there.
Avery.
What am I Googling?
The youngest quarterbacks.
Tell me where Derek Brooks lands on that list. I was between him and Ray Lewis, and I have a few. It's got to be close.
London Fletcher was another guy I thought about.
He was number two.
London Fletcher was?
London Fletcher was number two.
London Fletcher was number two. If you hadn't said 95, London Fletcher was going to be my next guess. If you were going to say like after 2000 or whenever he was drafted, he may have actually been late 90s.
Who did you
as
say,
well.
Derek Brooks?
Derek Brooks is third. Brian Urlacher was ninth.
Oh, wow. For as long as he was in the league, I would have thought he would have been a little bit higher.
I know. I didn't think of any of the guys. I didn't think of any of these other guys. Junior Seau has... he's eighth. That's crazy.
Really?
Wow. Or tied for seventh, actually. So
dang.
I didn't realize he had that many tackles. I knew he was good, but...
Russ is number four at 25.
With most tackles?
Wow.
Dang.
I mean, you throw that many interceptions, that's kind of what happens.
Nice.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Felt good
about that. Do we have a tiebreaker or no?
I won, right?
That was the tiebreaker.
I was the tiebreaker. So.
Oh, it was 2-2 before that?
It was 1-1 before that.
No, because I got I got Tomlin and I got Ray Lewis.
Yeah, but you said what? Because you got the point for the go. So he said I got the point for the first one because I got it first.
Well, we had a second point for the. So we're gonna need to work on this. This was a bad
okay. Trip. Well, if there was one
so,
point
so
each
you,
for
so,
the first
so
one,
so you
got a tie.
You
for
got
the first.
McVay, I got Tomlin, and then I got Lewis.
Shouldn't I have gotten the point for the first one?
You tied it. No, you did get the point for the first one. You got McVay.
And then there was a second part to it. That was like
Tomlin was the next question.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. This is the tiebreaker question. We're going historical
I'm
here.
I'm gonna lose now. That's fantastic. Okay. Gosh dang it. I actually won. Go for it. Let's do it.
All right. What year?
If you're disqualifying the Tomlin one, then sure. But
I mean I got it. I got it right first. I don't whatever.
No, no, go, let's do it. No, we're doing I guess Tomlin.
Okay, you ready?
Those are two different questions.
What year? And whoever's closer wins. And we'll go on go. What year was the AFL-NFL merger completed? Ready? 3, 2, 1.
1971.
What did you say? 70?
71.
I said 71.
Said the same thing.
Okay, well, it was 70. Okay. Okay, tiebreaker of a tiebreaker.
That's so funny.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Let's go to the next topic. We'll do the tiebreaker
okay,
later.
Okay, we'll do it later. Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty funny.
Crap.
Because the first Super Bowl was 71. So it would have been finalized the year before.
Yeah, that's why that's I have that in my mind. Well, you don't want to do it now? What's the next
question?
Oh, you
want to? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, if he has it. Oh, okay. I just want to give him time.
All right. What is the most points scored by a single team in the Super Bowl? 3, 2, 1, 54. Go.
48.
You said what?
54.
It was 55. Avery's the champion.
Oh, nice.
He's like, yeah, I deserve
ball,
it.
Ball, don't lie. That's what
listen,
I'm
going to
say.
Listen, we're going to have to work on this segment for next time.
Don't lie.
What was the team that got 54? It was one of the teams that
Cowboys?
Blew out an AFC team, right?
Was it when
they beat the
I
Bills?
It was the Broncos.
Yeah.
The Broncos
murdered Cam Newton, and he made his business decision.
No. Like a long time.
I don't think it was that year.
It was the Elway years. Because
the 49ers beat the Chargers.
Yeah.
Wait. No, that's total points.
The year that the Peyton Manning lost on the Broncos.
49ers, 55 points against the Broncos. The Broncos got shellacked.
Yep.
So.
But the one that Ryan was thinking about was the Seattle game against Peyton. His 55 touchdown year.
That was what I was.
But they scored
about.
Like 45 points
yes.
or something.
Yeah.
So.
Poor
man. Yeah. Oh, that one was rough.
That was brutal, man.
It was really, really rough.
All right. Good deal. Settled.
2-2.
Next. Ryan, it's all right. You, buddy.
It is 2-2.
For our first foray into our dynasty coverage here, I have a topic that I find that a lot of people have a little bit of an issue with when it comes to kind of what we talked about earlier with that, like, opinion of a player kind of dictating your value of them as it pertains to your value against what everybody else has. And the question at the top of my mind is, how do you know when it's time to bail on a dynasty asset? One who specifically hasn't broken out. Because if it's a dynasty asset who has, if they're old, whatever, there's way more outliers there than there would be with the age thing. And I find it very, very difficult because there are people who are like myself who have Quentin Johnston as deader than dead and other people who still believe in him. And then there's people like me who believe in Rashad Bateman. And then there's people who think he's deader than dead. So I'm curious as to Avery and Nathan, since, you know, you guys have been playing Dynasty for a good long while here. How do you guys operate and find that line?
I view everything in a dynasty lifetime. We always talk about viewing dynasty specifically in 3-year windows. And I mean, this is applicable to fantasy too. If you're betting on a guy who hasn't broken out going into his fourth year, I think you're just taking a shot in the dark compared to any other unproven rookie. Once you get through there's so much movement in the NFL on rosters with coaching staffs within a 3-year period also, that like the chances of someone who hasn't hit for 3 years, them actually coming out and being successful their fourth year is incredibly rare. Incredibly rare. The more years you go with a player not being productive, because even breakouts, for example, it took CeeDee Lamb technically 3 years to break out and be what we thought he could be, but he didn't just do nothing his first 2 years.
Well, there are levels.
Right.
Yeah,
he was a mid wide receiver too the first 2 years of his career. So we knew what his upside could be based on what he was doing while he was developing as a young wide receiver in the NFL. Right. And to me, like I mean I'm not going to go out there and be like, well, you know, all those people that bet on Cordarrelle Patterson and then they finally saw it all come to fruition his 10th year in the league. Like, Cordarrelle Patterson was a bust, and he always will be a bust. It doesn't matter what he did 2 years ago or what he will do in the next couple of years. He was a bust. You know, Treylon Burks
is a bust.
We're not quite there. Jameson Williams, technically, we're not quite there, just in the way that I kind of define when you determine what a bust is or isn't. But that's kind of how I view it. There's also the value side of it.
I was going to say, I judge everything based on value. So, like,
but again, value is generally, you see a cycle of value in a 3 year in a 3 year window, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, typically, right? With Quentin Johnson, I mean, he's a guy that right now I don't feel like if you have him on your roster, you can sell him, because I don't think it's necessarily a sunk cost yet. I don't think we have a large enough sample size. It was a bad year for the Chargers.
Not with
it
the dumpster fire of last year's offense.
So why would we take that and say, because of that, Quentin Johnston is dead? And the thing is, like, it's all going to depend on what type of receiver you are. Jalen Reagor, we knew that Jalen Reagor had busted pretty much within his second year in the league, because he had a good enough opportunity, and he also had a skill set where everybody thought he would probably come in and it would translate to the NFL right away, and then it just didn't. And so when you're talking about somebody like Quentin Johnston, he specifically is somebody who we looked at as a prospect and we said, this guy's a project. This guy is raw. He needs developed, and he needs to go somewhere where he can be developed. And then Quentin Johnston.
Like Josh Rosen, where you just knew right away.
Exactly.
And the Cardinals knew
Trey
right
Lance.
Away.
Yes. So exactly. Yep. And so he's a guy that came in and what he, it's not like Quentin Johnston didn't see. We're not talking Jonathan Mingo, or that's not who I'm thinking of. Who am I thinking of before that? Somebody really, really bad.
Kevin White?
I don't remember. We're not talking. No.
N'Keal Harry?
No. We're not talking. I don't know who I'm thinking of. I'll think of it later. We're not talking like this guy didn't see the field at all, didn't do anything. It was somebody from 2022, I feel like. But he's a guy that had. I mean, is this. I'm like double checking, make sure this is right.
2022?
One, two, three, four, five. He is a guy that had five games in double figures last year from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is a guy that and only scored two touchdowns last year. A 6'4 guy. And he was the wide receiver 74 in PPR leagues, which this is a good example because I don't think QJ's dead.
No, I don't think he's dead.
I think he needs a ton of work. And I don't think his rookie year really accomplished any of the work I thought he needed out of college. But I don't think he's dead.
But I guess my question is if you know that he has a lot of work left in him and his value has taken this hit, when do you determine that it's time to kind of, you know, bail on it? Because, like, from my perspective, I knew he came in and needed a lot of work, and I saw not really a lot that gave me hope for his NFL future. And at a certain point in his rookie season, when you can tell that it's not going well, there was a point where his value still had, he didn't hold first round value anymore, but he still held value. And my question is, like, where in that first season or that first off season after being, you know, after his rookie season, do you determine when to sell him? Because Avery, you and I made a trade in one of our leagues for Treylon Burks right after his rookie season, where I was just immediately out on it right away. I think for me, it's one of those things where if I don't see that consistent flash in a rookie season, especially for a wide receiver, I try to get out as fast as I can.
I feel like that's a little bit too hasty from like a talent evaluation perspective, like one season. Like I definitely like to give
hasty.
I definitely like to give a little bit of a wider sample, like 2 years. If I see 2 years and it's absolutely nothing, then maybe I'm out. But like I'm curious, what was the trade? Right? I don't remember it.
The trade was Treylon Burks and my 2024 first for Travis Etienne.
Interesting. Oh, I thought. So it was Burks. So did I end up?
Yes,
with Burks?
You ended up with Burks.
What did the first?
I'm looking into that right now.
I'm pretty sure it was the 103.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it ended up being a huge dub, but not because of the Burks factor. Like he didn't pan out.
No, but that's a classic rebuild trade. Like you down to your.
I mean, that's yeah. I was going to say
you insulate the crap out of your value with
that. That's a trade strategy at that point. Like if you have an unproven guy that you're targeting, generally you're not going one for one or targeting him specifically.
Bingo.
Unless you like super duper believe in him, which I mean, Treylon Burks was one of those guys last year that we did believe in, and it didn't work out. But and he does not have that dog in him.
No.
Treylon, no barks.
Look, I think with QJ specifically as the example here, like I'm not giving up on him because I feel like he was always a raw prospect. Now, the reason that I didn't sell QJ, because I have never drafted Quentin Johnson in a startup draft higher than the fifth round ever, first of all. And second of all, the reason that I didn't
get I'm pretty sure.
Hey, Ryan,
whoa, fact check.
Just say.
Hey, whoa. I can lie.
Justin Herbert's wide receiver one going in the fourth round.
Hey, who would have taken him there? So with QJ, like part of the reason I didn't sell him on that team was because the team investment was so high, or my team investment was so high. But if like as soon as he didn't do anything, so after week seven, what's he worth? A second?
Yeah, he started and he was going for
and
seconds.
So the reason I haven't given up on Quentin Johnson in Dynasty yet is because I know and believe in my heart of hearts he will be worth a second again. So I might as well wait and see if he's worth anything higher than
all
that.
All it takes, I mean, all it took was a game for him to become worth a second or less, in theory. And all it's going
to
take is
just a game for it
a good couple games switch. For it to go back up.
That's the value way of looking at it. But in terms of like when
I mean,
does
you
a receiver,
also do you do want to look at it differently at the wide receiver position compared to quarterback, compared to running back, compared to tight end.
Yes,
like
yeah.
Tight end you can almost just throw away. It's a complete dart throw at tight end. You can determine that David Njoku's a bust, and then he hits year six.
Right.
Like okay, I guess I was wrong, but I guess I was right about the first 6 years. Okay, I mean they span multiple lifetimes. So again, that's kind of why I view them differently. Like I would view David Njoku as a where you invested in him at price as a young asset, he was a bust because your dynasty league probably doesn't even exist 6 years later.
True.
You know, but I running back is tough, but I think running back can be a little bit easier too. And you have, since running back is so volatile, you really, really have like, you learn a lot quicker with running back than you do any other position. You learn with CEH very quickly.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah. Ryan, do you want to go by position and kind of talk about these? Because I think it's very positionally based for a lot of times in Dynasty, especially like, you know, when to move off.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree that it is positionally based. Wide receiver just happened to be the easiest jumping in point. But you're definitely right. We can just start at quarterbacks, I guess. I think the most, you know, present example of this is Bryce Young and Will Levis are both in that kind of tweener spot where they did not have good rookie seasons to varying degrees because of their respective draft capital. But we've seen it before with first round quarterbacks where they have a hit or miss rookie season, show a couple flashes, whatever it is. And that second season is really where we make our determining factor and you either turn into like a Trevor Lawrence who had a bad rookie year or a Kenny Pickett. And I'm curious for you guys, if there's a spot, if you're sitting there, like we've been advocating a lot for it this offseason with drafting Bryce Young because of his value, when do you make the decision throughout the season that you're just like, yeah, I'm not seeing enough? Because the outliers for a quarterback kind of starting to prove themselves in their third season are astronomically low. I mean, it's basically only what, like,
yeah,
Jordan Love and I guess Aaron Rodgers, which, yeah, is bad examples, but the point stands nonetheless.
I think it's tough with quarterback because when you have guys like Bryce Young who start so bad and they've set the floor and the bar of expectations so low. So they don't have to have elite, amazing production their second year for their value to increase. So like think about Trevor Lawrence from an efficiency perspective from year one to year two. He got a little bit better, but even like after his third year in the league, his yards per attempt has been average at best. And it still hasn't gotten better. It didn't take much, like in yards per attempt and adjusted yards per attempt is something that like people swear by in Dynasty and they look at for the deciding factor of like who's going to be a long-term Dynasty cornerstone at the quarterback position. And it again, Lawrence's bar was set so low going into his second year and his situation was getting so much better that he didn't have to be this dominant quarterback and be amazing for his value to go up. Now, he well exceeded expectations, so he ended up going in the first round. But again, that's not what we're necessarily expecting for a guy like Bryce Young. His value can go up around a round and a half, and he doesn't have to be going in the first round for you to get a value win when, you know, he's a high-end quarterback too, producing potentially with David Canales now there. Yeah. And then you got to look at the situation and the investment as well. Yeah. Will Levis is a second round pick. Bryce Young has multiple first round picks invested in him because of what they traded to move up for him. And they literally hired Dave Canales for the sole reason of developing Bryce Young.
Correct.
In making him not be a bust.
Yep.
Callahan can do whatever the frick he wants with Will Levis. And oh, they probably don't care.
I mean, it's almost a reset for it's almost a reset for Will Levis. It's almost a reset for Bryce Young too, like because of the new coaching regime.
I understand why people view them in similar lights, which is why their value is very similar in Dynasty. Like they're pretty much going back to back.
Yeah. And so you mentioned something, Ryan, and I think it's good. You mentioned like, yeah, when the running back comes out and, you know, goes into their second season, like very rarely if they come out and they're flat, do they like bounce back from that from a career arc standpoint? I think there are analytics to back up each of these positions in terms of like we did this video for wide receivers. Like odds are these wide receivers are going to be bust. You remember that Dynasty video? We basically, and Ryan, we had you do this research. We had you research the finishes of notable wide receivers in their first two seasons, and then based on how they finished in those seasons, how likely based on past metrics were they to either completely bust or to actually become a top 24 wide receiver. And we found the thresholds basically, like if you're not finishing above like a top 36 wide receiver in one of your first two seasons, then there is a extremely low chance, like outlier chance that you're going to be worth anything. And so like a lot of times you have guys like that where you can get out early enough because people are just so take locked on them. Jerry Jeudy's a great example of this.
Great example.
He finished as wide receiver 47 in his first year, in his rookie year, and wide receiver 85 in his second year. We could have looked at those metrics for wide receivers and their bust rates and said, odds are Jerry Jeudy's not doing anything. And this is when Jerry Jeudy was going in the sixth round still. Yeah.
And then what changed his value and changed the trajectory of his value for the next 2 years was what he did in like a six game sample size at the end of his third year.
Exactly. Exactly. And it completely, and if you now, so there it is. If had you sold at the end of the second season, like you should have, because technically that's when you should be like, yeah, he's probably not doing anything. You probably lost out on a little bit of value you would have gained had you just held to the end of the next season.
Right.
However, at the end of his second season, he still had considerable value.
Yes.
And he's in, obviously at the end of his third season, he had some, I mean, I'm curious. I'm just going to look.
Jerry Jeudy is, like you said, he's case in point and a guy whose situation was never going to change.
Exactly.
Now, Russell Wilson threw a wrench into those plans, and everyone thought that Russ was going to be the answer and he was going to be great and he was going to help Jerry Jeudy be successful. But man, like you're closing out a dynasty lifetime holding on to Jerry Jeudy when you could just get some fresh legs on your team and take a shot on like a early second round wide receiver, because that's what you could have gotten.
I mean,
if you just traded.
This is
not that long ago. No. That's crazy.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so Jerry Jeudy, when he was drafted, got as high up as wide receiver 12.
Yeah.
In his rookie year, he got up as high as like wide receiver 15. After his first 2 years in the NFL, in like that March, he got as high as wide receiver 17.
He maintained value for a long time. He had spikes going into his fourth year. After his third year, he was still a wide receiver too.
This is where he spiked during that season again.
Yep.
But look, even when he spiked, the highest his value got was wide receiver 17. And the year before, after he had finished as a wide receiver 85 and 47 in PPR leagues in his first 2 years, he was valued as the wide receiver 18. He had the same value. So actually, if you sold, you didn't lose out on anything. I stand corrected. You should have sold then. And why is that? Because, again, we had such take lock as a community on Jerry Jeudy. Now, I say we. Nathan and I didn't. We didn't. We were, well, you were higher on Jerry Jeudy than I was, weren't you? You and Simon both were, I feel like. I didn't like Jeudy Boy.
I liked Jeudy straight out of college. I loved him.
Well, yeah.
I mean, everybody did.
But if you,
I remember the argument was Cortland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy that year going into his third year. And it was like, absolutely not Cortland Sutton. If it's going to be anyone, it's going to be Jeudy. Guess who it ended up being? Judy, but it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter because both of them underwhelmed. So,
yeah, I mean, and again, it's positionally dependent, but we do have analytics to guide our decision-making processes. And for wide receiver, again, that's why having a good dynasty channel you watch it does the work for you is good, because then you can, like, okay, analytics say this guy's not going to hit now. Like,
right.
Yeah.
This is what our research team does, right? And so I love using analytics here to kind of guide these decisions. But what other position do we need to talk about?
I think running backs is probably the only other one we really need to touch on. As Nathan said earlier, tight ends is just such a crapshoot. It's not even worth it. We typically give them like 3-ish years as like their breakout window, which is so long that it's kind of a futile effort. But as it pertains to running backs, it's one of the more interesting positions to kind of look at in this scope, because for the longest time, running backs, you know, beyond the top of the fantasy world, Adrian Peterson's and Chris Johnson's, their running backs were a dime a dozen. You could get the same production, the VORP or warp, for, you know, running backs,
the VORP, as the Germans would say,
value VORP. Over, you know, replacement player, but I digress.
Is that an actual thing, Ryan? Okay. I was going to say we could create it, but he's not lying. He means it.
What?
Yeah.
VORP.
Yeah. It's
seriously?
Actual thing.
It's value over replacement player. We thought you were using a German accent.
No. Yeah. Why would I do... What would make me do that in that sense? Never mind.
Vikings fan.
Historically, the Germans have been fairly... peaceful and kind. I mean,
all right. Okay, we're moving on. 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 All right. Back to running backs. A position on the football field, not a historical lecture. Running backs. They're a dime a dozen for a lot of it. Where you get teams that do a committee. You get teams that utilize a third down back in addition to kind of your bell cow Nick Chubb-esque running backs. And for a lot of them who get drafted in the middle rounds, they don't end up actually taking over a big chunk of workload during their rookie season or during their second season. And it kind of gets to a weird sticking point where you have like running backs like Zach Charbonnet, who doesn't get a lot of opportunity in that offense. However, there's still a high value for him in fantasy as it compares to other clear running back twos on their respective teams. And my question is, barring injury, which obviously is more prevalent at running back than it is anywhere else, like why would we not be selling Zach Charbonnet right now at value? I understand that there's the Kenneth Walker thing and you guys aren't necessarily the biggest fan of him, but Zach Charbonnet still isn't exactly seeing a lot of that opportunity. I mean, his opportunity share last season was 37%, and it's, for all intents and purposes, all the running backs who were really worthwhile in fantasy were north of 40, 45, and 50%. Now, obviously, Charb is a running back too in his offense, but at the same time, if you're not gaining a sizable chunk of the offense and still carrying value, why are we carrying that value? And why would we not sell him? Like, Charbonnet is somebody that I would be selling right now at value.
I think I would agree with you if the situation in Seattle had carried over from last year. The main reason I think that people are still holding out hope for Charbonnet, and in my opinion, I mean, what you're talking from a value standpoint, he's being drafted in the 12th round, right? I mean, so it's not like he has a super expensive price tag. I mean, I think maybe you could have gotten a late second for him in this year's rookie draft. I don't know who would have been paying that price with the talent that was there. But with Charbonnet, like, I do think a one-year sample size is a little bit too small for me. I will say, if it was the exact same coaching staff coming back, exact same scheme, exact same quarterback, then yeah, maybe I'm like, you know what? This is what they think Sharps is. Let's just get off of him here. But you have a completely different situation. I think you do have a cohort of people who are holding out hope that Charbonnet can overtake Kenneth Walker. And I think the reason for that and what they are correct in thinking is that because Zach Charbonnet is, in some aspects, more talented than Kenneth Walker, But they're very good complementary backs, and you see these complementary backs produced together all the time. We saw this in Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard. Ezekiel Elliott was productive because he got the touchdowns, and Kenneth Walker, I'm fairly confident he'll get the touchdowns. Tony Pollard was the change of pace back, though, and Zach Charbonnet doesn't have as much, I would say, versatility as Tony Pollard does, but he's still definitely the receiving back there, in my opinion. And so I think the reason that Charbonnet is a guy I'm not giving up on yet is because you have a completely different situation and a completely different coaching staff with zero investment into any of these running backs. And so when it comes time for camp in Seattle, the best guy is going to take that job. And you can't convince me. You cannot. And Kenneth Walker, you say we're not a big fan of him. I don't mind Kenneth Walker as an NFL player. I think he's a good NFL back. I think I would like for him to be a back on any NFL team that was a playoff contender. I don't think he's a good fantasy asset. So that's where I just don't want Kenneth Walker. But Charbonnet didn't do anything from a production standpoint last year either. The hope I have is that he's only played 1 year and that the new coaching staff will maybe give him an increased role. Because I don't think looking at 1 year and saying, yeah, he only played 37%. So, Ryan, I would like, this is something maybe we can put our research team on. I would like to see, you know, in a running back's rookie year, when they get less than 50% opportunity share in their rookie year, what is the likelihood that they are a top 15 running back at any point in their career? Yeah. Because I'm not sure there would be a correlation there.
There definitely is. I've seen some charts, not necessarily about that, but about the year two bump or the year three bump after having zero value. The thing about this, you look at it with risk and reward. The reward is a potential top 15 back. The risk is he goes down just a little bit in value. That's the thing about receivers. I might carry one like project receiver on my team, but for the most part, you should have not a ton of receivers on your team because it's harder for them to go up in value. Take your shot on one guy. With running backs, you can take a bajillion shots. Even if you miss on Charbonnet and he is just a handcuff, you're not losing that much value. And let's say Walker gets injured. If you're worried about losing that value, you just recoup it.
Bingo. Sell it. That was my next point, right?
All reward, no risk. Why not just keep him?
Charbonnet is one of the most talented backups in the NFL, in my opinion.
And he's got the draft capital. Yeah.
So what happens the second Walker
he's
got to
get
injured?
His yards per reception up because that's really his that's his skill set.
But again, as a rookie in an offense where you've got a completely different passing offense coming in this year.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying he's got to get it up, but I think he has the ability to, for sure.
Does that sway you back the other direction, Ryan, when you hear that standpoint? Because I don't know. I just feel like the situation could lend itself to some changes.
I mean, I understand that side of it 100%, and it does make sense. My issue is for all intents and purposes, that to me is effectively banking on injury. You're banking on Kenneth Walker getting injured to increase the value of Zach Charbonnet.
Starting to not be a bad bank.
Yeah,
I'm kidding.
Or you could bank on him beating out Kenneth Walker.
But I don't think
I really do not see any
possibility that happens, though. Like what has shown you that Zach Charbonnet is a better running back than that of Kenneth Walker?
I mean,
what showed me that Kenneth Walker is going to hold on to that role long term?
I was going to say, like, I don't feel like either of them have shown us very much.
Some flashes, granted, I mean, Walker has a couple of years of flashes compared to Charbonnet's 1 year, which wasn't really many flashes, so he has that going for him for sure.
But I mean, he was
not with a new coaching regime. I think it's an even playing field with a brand new coaching staff.
I mean, Kenneth Walker last year was 35th in the league among running backs in target share, so he's not getting any receiving game work. He was 39th in true yards per carry, 30th in yards per touch. He was 23rd in breakaway
limited
run
skill
rate.
Set.
I mean, he 26th in yards created per touch.
Does he do
91st in EPA?
Does he do any pass game blocking either?
I don't know, honestly. That feels like a sharp thing to me. But what's interesting about Kenneth Walker is his yards per reception was 4th in the league.
There you go.
But they don't use him there.
Right.
So that's part of the reason is like right. when they it's use him, like, it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
The element of surprise stuff. But
right.
I just don't, like, I don't, this has turned into a Kenneth Walker Charbonnet discussion. We have to be done. But I don't feel like Kenneth Walker has, like, ran away with that job by any means.
No.
That's where I'm at. No. So I don't think it necessarily is all hinging on Kenneth Walker getting hurt. But it's not like Kenneth Walker's stayed healthy either. He's missed 2 games each of his first 2 years. So I don't know. I think with running backs, it's way harder because they're so volatile. They're so volatile. I mean, look at Zamir White. Zamir White had value as a training camp darling, didn't, and now has it again.
Yep.
Like,
Yeah.
You have way more of these spikes, and they're way less predictable with running backs. So that one's honestly the hardest one 100%. To crack, in my opinion. But I do love the one injury away guys, and I love rostering talented backups and even talented third strings in Dynasty just because of the potential for a high value fluctuation.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it. And for every example of a running back who never really panned out, there's going to be the opposite, where we've got Kyren Williams, who was dead in terms of value, and if you stored him in your taxi squad or whatever, now you're sitting sitting extremely pretty because he was worth nothing and is now worth everything. So just kind of a fun little thought-provoking thing in the sense of everybody's got to have their own breaking point with an asset. And if I'm in a win now spot, my leash might be shorter. You know, it obviously depends on your roster makeup and everything as well. So,
and I will say this as my parting thought here. I think a lot of times Dynasty players are way too impatient with players. I think a lot of times we're so, because the Dynasty community is notorious for being the most reactive group of people in the world.
Which is so funny because like what ends up plummeting or skyrocketing the value of a player is a couple weeks of production, but all we can think about in the entire offseason is rookies, and we don't even think about production.
Exactly.
It's so funny. Like the irony is...
There's so much contradictory nature. It's
the Dynasty
it's,
community is bipolar.
I know, but we love them. They are our people.
They are our peeps.
Folks. Yeah, we're talking about other Dynasty people.
That's not not our viewers.
Not
no.
You listening.
Not anyone listening.
No, our listeners. You're smart and important. All right,
and beautiful.
And with that, we're gonna wrap it up for this week. So shout out to John and Ryan for prepping this week's stuff. Hey, great topics. Love discussing those. Shout out to me for winning trivia. It's 2-2 now. I got in a hole, but I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like the Pacers Knicks this year.
There we go.
They're down 2-0.
I'm the Pacers. I'm cool with that. Let's
well,
go.
No, I was just saying
that
it's like
gonna
that.
Win games having a Madison Square Garden, so.
We don't know right, who's so who yet. Okay.
Make sure you drop a rating on the podcast.
I can't believe I just compared myself to the Knicks.
You
was
did.
Awful.
I was going
to
say, you don't know, you said you don't
I was
know who's
comparing
who,
the
you
situation.
Just, you just
I did
put
technically compare myself to the Knicks.
You did.
So that was like Indiana. Oh,
blasphemy.
Yeah, that's absolutely horrible.
Right.
No, thank you.
Drop a rating on the podcast.
Nor everything
flockfantasy.com/domain. Use code domain. You get our trade calculator. You get our rankings for both redraft and dynasty. You get our my teams, which also works for redraft and dynasty. You get a free team review when you sign up for the annual mother flocker tier. So make sure you head over to flockfantasy.com and use code domain to unlock all of our stuff. Share this with your friends. Make sure you guys are spreading the word about the podcast as we get this back going. But we appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
It's a show about fantasy football.